This is a Discovery Channel podcast.
Five Boy Scouts and their leaders take on one of the toughest trails in the Grand Canyon. But they are soon at the mercy of a freak heat wave.
How come it's so hot?
As their water runs out.
Is that it?
What started out as a fun adventure quickly turns into a fight for survival. In a canyon filled with deadly dangers, three 15-year-old boys risk their lives in a desperate race to find water. What it takes to survive on I Shouldn't Be Alive. The Grand Canyon in Arizona. It's the biggest canyon on Earth, 18 miles wide and nearly a mile deep in parts. Its sheer size makes it one of the world's most extreme hiking environments, drawing thousands of adventurers every year. After camping out for a night close to the canyon's north rim, five Boy Scouts from Utah are about to make their very first ascent to the bottom of the canyon. Three of the boys are close friends. 15-year-old Mark Coons has been a scout for 4 years.
Scouting was really a big thing for me. I'm an Eagle Scout, which is the highest rank in the Boy Scouting program, and so, you know, it's meant a lot in my life.
Mark hangs out with Jordan Weinegar, who goes to the same high school in Bountiful, Utah.
Every one of us boys, we'd grown up in the same neighborhood, gone to school together, and so we were excited to spend some time to bond and to have fun with each other.
It's still kind of heavy with all this water.
Nah, it's all that bacon I'm hearing about.
First rule of hiking, always be nice to the guy carrying the breakfast.
It's a good point, Mark. Maybe I should take that pass.
Dream on.
Making up the trio is David Phillips. He's the most experienced hiker of the three, and he's also the joker of the party. The day's shaping up to be blisteringly hot, and the leaders are following the number one rule of Grand Canyon hiking. Take water, and lots of it.
Okay, boys, don't leave anything behind. It's a real deal today. We're going over the rim.
Guy Davis is the scout's leader.
Most of the boys that went, I knew them very well.
They were about as high as kites. They were excited for the experience.
I still remember my first time in the canyon.
Veteran hiker Lauren Pace is in charge of navigation, and he's also brought his brother Earl along. The group has already hiked 3 hours cross-country to their first night's camp. Today, they'll make their descent following the unmarked Little Nankoweep Creek. It's a tough hike with steep descents that drop 4,000 feet down to the Colorado River. There they'll fill up on water and take an easier route back up. The group should be home inside of 7 days. After a couple of hours hiking, the boys reach the canyon's north rim.
When you walk around that corner and you see that huge panoramic view of cliffs, you know, that go a mile down, there's nothing like it.
That's where we're going. All the way.
Whoa. It's amazing. This place is incredible.
Now the scale of what they're taking on really hits home.
We're going all the way down there.
If you get bored of hiking, there's always the fast way down.
An hour later, the group reaches the end of the official route. From here on, they'll be off trail all the way down.
The trail ended, and then it got very rocky. That's when we saw the difficulty of what the hike was going to be.
Jordan's right to be wary. Every year, some 300 hikers get into trouble here, and about 200 of them have to be airlifted out by rescue services. Around 10 more aren't so lucky and die here. And going off trail in the canyon intensifies the risk.
Yep, this is it, fellas. The big chute.
The chute is a rocky gully over a mile long, an extreme descent over boulders, loose rock, and gravel. Immediately, Jordan sees how tough this will be.
It was turning into a hike that, you know, it was getting a little more dangerous.
The group has no radio or cell phone. If anyone gets hurt, they're on their own.
It was really steep.
As the most experienced hiker, David takes it in his stride.
Packs off, guys.
Mark is a little more cautious.
You'd have to climb down a big rock and hand packs down to other people.
I got it.
So at that point, it wasn't just a hike. It was more of a climb.
If you did put your foot wrong or something, you definitely could take a nasty fall, maybe not stop until you go all the way down to the bottom of the Grand Canyon.
After an hour of hot and exhausting scrambling, even scout leader Guy is struggling.
It's very difficult to keep your footing as you were sliding down.
Suddenly, Guy loses control.
Guy! Guy, you okay?
I hit a log straight on, and it just, I managed to catch it with part of the body you should never hit a log with, and literally knocked the wind out of me considerably.
You okay to stand? Come on, let me take this pack.
As bad as it looks, Guy's lucky. It could have been much worse. 2 hours after starting down, the exhausted group reaches the bottom. They've descended over 1,000 feet. Now, there's no going back. The temperature's been climbing all day. Now it's touching 100 degrees. It's not long before the burning sun starts to take its toll.
How come it's so hot?
It's gotta be a freak thing. It'll be cooler tomorrow.
But it won't be cooler tomorrow. Above the group, a massive area of high pressure more than 1,000 miles across has been building for days. It's sending temperatures in the canyon rocketing. And the route down to the river takes them across one of the canyon's most exposed areas.
This is when we realize that we don't have any shade. We're not going to have any shade from now on.
There's nowhere to hide. It's constantly beating down on you.
That's just draining us and dehydrating us.
Just over a day into the hike, the heat and the exertion are taking their toll on the group's most precious resource.
We were alarmed that we were going through the water as fast as we were.
They've already used up 3/4 of their water. The only place the group are going to find more is the Colorado River, but it's 2,000 feet down, a day and a half's hard hiking away. In this heat, they'll run out long before they get there.
As we were hiking, that's all we could think about was the river, of getting to the river.
But the boys are about to find out that blistering heat isn't the only hazard they face.
Dave, don't move. You got a scorpion on your back.
One sting could immobilize Dave and make reaching the river even tougher.
Careful.
You think it could kill you?
I don't know. I don't really want to find out.
It's a reminder of just how hostile the canyon is. Aside from scorpions, there are thousands of rattlesnakes. Stepping on one is all too easy. If anyone got bitten, they could die before they make it to the hospital. That afternoon, the temperature peaks at 108 degrees. By 7 p.m., they've had enough.
Okay, guys, this is it for the night.
They are all completely wiped out.
We were really exhausted. We were just grateful to be off of our feet. We were grateful to have the sun down off of us.
The mood is somber, but David does his best to keep up his buddy's morale.
Hey, guys! Guys, come here! You can see the river.
But Jordan's not convinced.
It's miles away, Dave.
And neither is Mark.
When I first saw the river, all I could think was, that is still very, very far away. So it was really worrisome to me that it was so hot and that I was running a little low on water.
Just think about running in that river and drinking pints of icy water. A couple of hours in the morning and we'll be there.
In fact, there's still a tough day's hike from the river. They'll run out of water long before they reach it.
We begin to say, gee whiz, am I going to be able to make it down to the river tomorrow? Have I got enough water?
Definitely that night I was starting to feel a little shocked and surprised that something I thought would be so fun was starting to turn into something that was so scary.
The next morning, there's no let up in the heat.
We could feel our bodies were dehydrating. We could feel the heat.
Their bodies are sweating out up to 4 pints of water an hour and dehydrating fast. This will make their brain cells dry up, causing poor judgment and eventually triggering hallucinations. And as fluid is lost from the bloodstream, blood pressure will drop, making them dizzy and liable to pass out. Just before noon, they face a further ordeal. Another grueling descent down a treacherous chute. And the further they descend, the higher the temperature gets, a full degree hotter for every 200 feet down. Halfway down, the boys stop to catch their breath and grab a desperately needed drink.
Is that it?
You?
Not a drop.
David shared a lot of his water. He gave the most of his water to anybody.
It's a disaster. Their life-saving water has gone. And there's still a good half day from the river.
I knew that we were out of water. I knew that, you know, if we fooled around or wasted our time, I knew that we would run into trouble.
Come on, let's get to the river.
Guy is struggling most in the unrelenting heat. He's fallen behind the rest of the group.
It was like being in an oven. I was physically exhausted.
Severe dehydration is putting Guy's body under intolerable pressure. Finally, it just gives out.
Hey, where's Guy?
By the time the group notice he's not with them, they're hundreds of feet further down the chute.
Guy!
I need some help up here!
Can't you get down?
I can't! I gotta take a break!
At that point, I began to really question whether I'd ever make it down to the river.
We need to keep going.
Look, we can't just leave him. There's some shade here. We'll sit in the shade and wait for him to catch up. We can't leave him behind.
But Jordan thinks that waiting for Guy could be a fatal mistake.
If we don't go now, we're all gonna die. I'm not just gonna sit here and wait and die.
When Lauren said we needed to wait for Guy, I was mad. I knew that if we didn't leave, that we would die.
What he needs is water. Let's get down to the river and get him some. Come on.
It's a tough call. Leave Guy behind and he could die, but waiting for him to catch up could kill them all.
Okay.
It's difficult to leave somebody behind, but when it's your own life, you need to do what you need to do.
We gotta get down!
Get some water!
We're coming back! We're coming back with water!
Aaron, look after the boys!
I had never heard a tone like that in anyone's voice before, that kind of fear or anything like that ever in my life. Just, it changes you when you hear something like that.
2 hours later, the whole group is desperate for water.
Anybody got any water left?
Nope, I'm out.
Then, Lauren remembers something that might just save their lives.
Hey, wait a minute. There's a creek runs up there, half a mile along the ridge. There was water in that creek last June.
I'll go.
David volunteers.
Give me some
canister. See trees along the creek bank, okay?
It's a terrible blow. The creek is dry as dust.
It was very difficult. We had no idea where water was, how we were going to get there, when we'd get there, or how much longer we'd last.
After hiking nonstop for 6 hours, they're still a long way from the river. The temperature has climbed to a searing 112 degrees. Dehydration and exhaustion are taking their toll.
Our bodies became weak very fast. Our pace that we were walking slowed down extremely.
71-year-old Lauren Pace has had enough.
Lauren, you okay?
Don't fuss. I'm okay. I'm okay. Listen. Guys, the sun is a killer. There's some shade here. We should wait. Till it's dark.
Not everyone agrees with Lauren's plan.
There was a feeling among the boys that if we stayed there, that we would die, and it was urgent, not something that we could just sit around and wait for, because there's still, you know, hours before dark.
The boys want to push on. If they reach the river, they can bring back water to the group.
It's hours till sunset. We stay here till night, we're all dead.
Well, Lauren knows where to go.
Right, so he can tell us where to go. Come on. You want to just sit here, or do you want to do something?
Let's do it.
Mark?
Okay.
It's a momentous decision for 3 15-year-olds.
Lauren, we need to go on.
You shouldn't travel in this heat.
We're going.
When we left Lauren and Earl under that rock in the shade, it didn't feel like even a decision at all. It was more like, we have to.
Armed with directions, the boys head out. They're on their own. Back up the canyon, Guy is deteriorating. His body has now lost the ability to sweat.
I wanted to sweat. I knew that if I could sweat, that it would cool down my body. And I physically tried to will myself to do that, and I couldn't do it.
Dehydration is sucking fluid out of Guy's bloodstream. In a desperate bid to keep him alive, his brain shuts down blood vessels just beneath the skin's surface, cutting off the fluid supply to his sweat glands. Without the cooling effect of sweat, Guy's temperature could get dangerously high. If it reaches 108 degrees, his brain will begin to die. Lauren is worried about the three boys hiking alone and sends his brother and the other scouts after them. But the three boys are already way ahead.
We were hiking for hours and feel like we weren't any bit closer. It just seemed like we were never gonna get there.
They're desperate to reach the river. They just need to find the way down. But somehow, they've gone horribly wrong. Everywhere they look, there's no way down. Just a sheer 200-foot cliff.
We could not see any way down it.
It's a total dead end.
There's no way down.
What do we do?
I don't know, Mark. Nothing, I guess.
The river's out of reach. Now all they can think of is getting out of the sun. The boys are now certain they face a slow and painful death from dehydration.
In my mind, I knew we were gonna die. You're weak, your body hurts and aches, you have headaches. I just remember not knowing if I'd ever get up from that position. I remember that that could be the last place I'd be, is under that rock.
It was a pretty sad situation there, you know. And I was almost turned 16. I wasn't gonna get to drive or anything. You know, you think about your family, that you're not gonna see your mom again or your dad, and it's really sad.
Even David, the optimist of the group, is struggling to see a way out.
I'd asked David a couple times by now, David, do you think that we're gonna make it? Are we gonna die?
We are gonna make it, aren't we?
And most of the time he'd be like, oh, Mark, of course we're gonna make it. You're fine, don't worry about it, okay?
I think we might die here.
But this is the first time I heard David say, you know, Mark, I think we might. I think we might die.
Mark starts to drift in and out of consciousness. The cells in his brain are drying up. The fluid inside them thickens and signals transmitted through the cells around his brain get scrambled. This produces bizarre and vivid images.
I had a dream of myself in a coffin. You know, my family had walked by, but my littlest brother just broke down in tears, covered his eyes. I woke up and I was like, I don't want to die.
Mark's disturbing dream spurs him into action. He makes a dramatic decision. In a last-ditch bid to reach the river, he's going to try to climb down the 200-foot cliff.
I had no idea where I was going, and I'm not a mountaineer or anything like that, but I decided we can't stay here. I took my backpack, and I chucked it off the cliff, you know, so I'd hope that I was going to make it down to pick it up again.
Mark threw his backpack over and said, you know, this is what we need to do.
Trying to climb down the cliff without ropes and in his weakened state is near suicidal. But Mark's made his mind up. He's going to get down or die trying.
Come on, guys. We gotta do it.
Even for experienced climbers, this would be a dangerous descent. But Mark has no ropes and has never rock climbed in his life. A fall from this height would kill him.
Guys, you can do it!
David and Jordan are scared, but if they don't get water soon, they'll die.
I thought we were gonna die anyways. To me, death was gonna happen. And so it seemed like anything would be better, even if it was a ridiculous plan.
Hearts thumping, they start to lower themselves into the void. Then, Jordan is hit by a chilling realization.
Hey Dave, how are we gonna get back up this to the others?
We knew that it would be too difficult to get back to the top of that. And at that time, we knew that there's no way we'd be able to make it back to them with water.
The boys can't save their friends, but they can save themselves.
We climbed down that cliff, which was very frightening to me, because I knew that if any of us fell, we would die.
The boys use every crack and crevice they can find to hang onto the cliff face. Mark makes it down.
Hey, I can hear it! The river!
But David is in trouble.
You okay, Dave? My eyes are going funny.
Problems with eyesight are an early symptom of heat stroke. David needs water fast. It's a terrifying climb, but David and Jordan finally make it down. The three friends have pulled off an incredible achievement.
It was a sheer cliff that I couldn't do again. I think we were all amazed that we were still alive, I guess.
At last, the river is within reach. But higher up the canyon, Scout Leader Guy is losing hope that help will ever come. Then, just when he thinks things can't get any worse.
There was a rather large rattlesnake that was a few feet away from me.
The Western Diamondback Rattlesnake is one of the most aggressive snakes in the U.S. An adult has enough venom in its body to kill up to 10 people.
I remember experiencing the fear that that snake would turn and sense my body heat.
But Guy is so weak, he can't move out of striking range.
And that experience lasted for about an hour while that snake was there.
At last, the snake crawls away. The boys have struggled on for an hour, but they still haven't reached the river.
We could hear the water, and it seemed so close. But as we go around the one corner and then the next corner and then the next corner, you know, each corner we thought it was the next one and it wasn't. I just remember how bad we wanted the water. Our tongues were like a rock wrapped with sandpaper. The pain of it was just excruciating. I remember Dave complaining about his vision and he was shaking. All of us were. We got to an area where there was a tree that had fallen and it was kind of crossing the path.
David was leaning against a tree and I was like, hey, you know, we're almost there, guys. And at that point, David collapsed.
David? Dave, you okay?
Me and Mark went over to him.
Dave.
And I remember seeing Dave's eyes roll back in his head and his breathing is really jumpy. And I just knew that we were in trouble.
David is suffering severe heat stroke. The only thing that can help him now is water.
Say something, David.
I'd taken first aid merit badge, you know, as a scout.
David?
They train you for extreme situations like this. I knew it was very serious.
Hey, Jordan, you guys get to the river. Bring back water. We could have got you some water, all right?
Jordan races towards the sound of the river.
And as I went around the first corner, I could see the water, and it was about 100 yards away. And I remember getting to the water and just being so grateful. I just knew I needed a drink. You know, I wanted it so bad. And so I took a drink out of the water, but I knew that there was a higher priority, that Dave needed the water.
At last, they can give David the water he so desperately needs.
Why isn't he swallowing it?
But David doesn't seem able to swallow it. His friends are frantic.
Pour it on him.
So the next thing we could think to do was to pour it on him to cool him off.
Come on, man. I'm out. I'll go.
Hurry, okay? Hurry!
I got to the river, and I took my bottles, and I was filling them up and drinking a little bit. And when I pulled up the water bottle, I could not believe it. I saw two big yellow rafts coming around the corner.
The next thing I knew is I hear Mark yelling help from the distance, and I was just hoping for something.
It's an incredible stroke of luck. A minute earlier or later, and the rafters would have passed by without finding the boys.
David. David, can you hear me?
What's more, the rafting party is made up of off-duty doctors and paramedics.
Let's get him back down. Let's get him wet.
That was such a great relief to me to know that there's somebody here that knows how to take care of Dave.
Mayday, mayday.
With night falling, there's no chance of a helicopter rescue before dawn. But David couldn't be in better hands.
Seemed forever that they were working on him, not knowing if he's going to make it, not knowing if he'll die.
He's still hypothermic.
It was dark. So I can't really put a time on it, but somewhere around 10 that night, the one that said he was a doctor came over and said, I'm sorry to inform you, but your friend has just passed away.
Sorry.
And it was a hard experience.
I think it really tore apart our hearts, knowing that our friend was gone.
At dawn, helicopters locate the rest of the group. They have all survived, but they quickly learn the news about David.
It's so weird, and it changes your perspective on death when someone you know and someone you've seen and been with an hour before, you know, or a couple hours before, and was vibrant and wonderful and happy, and then he's gone.
10 years on, Jordan is a policeman in Utah, and Mark is training to be a dentist. They are still good friends. Neither of them will ever forget their good friend, David Phillips, and both men stay in touch with David's family. A police report on the disaster gave a finding of accidental death.